Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, March 31st, 2012. This is episode 861. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage using your own computer and printer whenever you need it. You'll never have to go to the post office again. For my special $110 bonus offer, including $55 free postage, go to Stamps.com today and use the offer code TechGuy. And by BigCommerce. From web design to accounting to marketing, BigCommerce provides everything you need to run a successful online business. For a limited time, get a 30-day free trial to build a fully functional store. Go to BigCommerce.com, click on the radio icon, and use my promo code Leo. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. It's time for the Tech Guy, yes. The show that combines awesome nerdiness with bikinis. No, I think it's radio. There's no bikinis, I'm sorry to say. Coffee, how about that? And technology. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you've got a question. You want to talk high tech with me? I'd love to do that with you. 888-827-5536 is the phone number. 8888 Ask Leo. So you've seen all the hoorah about Apple's Chinese manufacturer, Foxconn, and of course all the attention being paid to Foxconn and their supposedly arduous working conditions and so forth. And Apple's, you know, I think quite rightly responded well. They've had an independent auditor come in. They've said, you know, we're committed to the health and well-being of our workers all over the world, and so we want to take care of them. So Foxconn decided to cut hours. No more overtime for its 1.2 million workers, while promising compensation that protects them against losing income. Apple, of course, encouraged this in response to this criticism. Tens of thousands of Foxconn workers protested, saying, "Give us back our hours, you American swine." This is why this is a very difficult problem. At the Foxconn factory gates, many workers seem unconvinced their pay wouldn't be cut along with the hours. They really said, "We're going to cut your hours, but not your pay." And they said, "We make so much more on overtime. We were worried we'll have less money to spend. Of course, if we work less overtime, it would mean less money." Foxconn is going to reduce working hours to 49 hours a week, and that's including overtime. And the workers are, some anyway. I don't know, maybe most of the workers are saying, "Oh, finally, a rest." Chen Yamei, a Foxconn worker from Hunan province, said, "We're here to work, not to play. Our income is very important." She'd worked there for 4 years. "We've just been told we can only work a maximum of 36 hours a month of overtime. I tell you, a lot of us are unhappy with this. We think 60 hours of overtime a month would be reasonable. 36 hours is too little." She earns $634 a month, which for an American, of course, would be below minimum wage. But she apparently is very happy. I think a lot of workers especially come to Foxconn from the provinces. They send money back home. That money's important. They're there. You know, that's what they're there to do. Huang Hui, 21-year-old worker who had been there for almost 2 years, says, "I don't go out much. There's nothing much to do. I go out for a meal once in a while. This is a good company to work for. Working conditions are better than a lot of small factories." Well, there you go. This is why it's so difficult, you know. Apple, there's been quite a call for Apple to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. I think that's not a bad idea. But remember, Apple is in fact an international company selling products all over the world, including China. In fact, China is the biggest, fastest-growing Apple market of all. So it's all very complicated. I don't know if you can make a blanket statement that we're taking advantage of Chinese workers. Who knows? I mean, we're providing jobs for them. Maybe we should bring those jobs back here for American workers. I don't know. Although one of the complaints is that American workers are not skilled enough for the industrial jobs, the manufacturing jobs that are out there. Parents are telling their kids, oh, don't become a machinist. There's no future in that. And in fact, there is. The more skilled, the people who do CNC cutting, the computer cutting and so forth, are highly skilled workers. They are in great demand. There aren't enough of them. Tim Cook, the CEO, the new CEO, Steve Jobs' replacement at Apple, visited the iPhone factory this week, also in response to those critical reports. It's the first time an Apple CEO visited the factories. Steve Jobs never went. Cook met workers, smiled. He is, it's interesting, a report just came out that he's the top-rated CEO in America, the most beloved CEO with his employees. Top-rated chief executive based on sentiment within the company across all industries. 97% approval rating among the rank and file. That's basically the same as Steve Jobs had. In fact, 2 points better than Steve Jobs had in his last year. Not so bad. It's very interesting to watch as Apple turns this corner. Apple was created by Steve Jobs. When Steve left or was forced out, started going downhill, and he came back just in time to save the company, turned it around, made it the most successful company in the world in terms of market cap. According to the analysts at IDC, we are buying smartphones a lot. A lot! Worldwide smart connected devices. Last year, 1 billion units. It's a big market and growing. 1 billion. I mean, how many billions of people are there? Is that everybody? They expect the figure to jump to 1.1 billion this year, with a total of, by 2016, 1.84 billion new web-connected gadgets hitting the market. That's pretty much everybody who could use one having one. That's tablets, smartphones, and even computers. Although computers are a shrinking piece of the pie, x86-compatible PCs, Windows and Macs, now only represent 36% of the market. They'll go down to a quarter of the market in 2016. Android is already 29.4% of the market. iOS, remember Apple for a long time was just such a fraction of the computer market. They had 4%. iOS is 14%. And where is the fastest growing area? China. Of course. That's you look at Microsoft Windows. We're seeing more and more about Windows 8 now. And one of the rumors that came out this week is a Chinese version of Windows 8 will be one of the versions just for China. And, of course, Apple updated its Mountain Lion. It'll be out sometime later this year. And one of the features that was trumpeted, like on the front page, is it'll work in China, Chinese localization. It's a big market. Don't make any mistake about that. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We can talk about that. Smartphones. Home theater. Scott Wilkinson will be joining us at 33 past the hour. And any of your technology questions. This is what I'm here for. This is what I do. We have a great website. You can follow along in the chat room and online on the streaming video. You'll find all that for free. I don't charge. At techguylabs.com. I apologize in advance for the chat room. Not for the chat room. Oh, I do apologize for them, but for other reasons. I apologize in advance. No, the chat room's great. I just like to tease them. I apologize in advance for the website. It looks like it hasn't been updated for, 15 years. It hasn't. But it is in the process. Oh, we are having so much fun with this new design. I cannot wait till that comes out. But if you go to techguylabs.com, I put all the links to the things I talk about there. Actually, James DeRuvo does it. Thank you, James. Links to the chat room, links to the live streaming video, everything you need to know, even the music in between commercials, all coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I apologize for the chat room in advance. Kyle Benham's mocking me. So I did something kind of stupid. Well, it's not stupid. I had to do it. It's a review. And so I got an email from a guy. So anyway, I'll tell you what I did. There's a company, we saw them at CES, called Liquipel, L-I-Q-U-I-P-E-L. It's like Liquid Repel, right? .com. And they were at CES, at the Consumer Electronics Show, and they were showing people, it's a process they would do to your electronics. It's in their material, it says, Liquipel revolutionizes electronic protection. Our proprietary process applies nano-sized particles throughout your device to prevent damage from accidental water exposure. So they said, well, Leo, send us your iPhone. I said, okay. I didn't think it through because I realized after I sent it to them, that means I'm going to have to get my iPhone wet to see if it works. And I didn't really want to do this. It wasn't that I didn't trust them. I just didn't want to take the chance. But it does say, it's very clear, if you go to the Liquipel site, waterproof is the word they use, waterproof. Long-lasting. It permanently bonds on the molecular level. $60. So I got it back, and you can't tell, and it's been changed at all. It doesn't feel different, doesn't look different, works exactly the same until I dunked it in a glass of water. And just like a donut, I didn't go deep sea diving with it. It basically duplicated what would happen, which is what happens to most people. How does your phone get wet? Seriously, how does your phone? Because you drop it in the toilet, right? Okay, I mean, I know that's, we don't want to talk about these things, but that's how it gets wet. So I duplicated that. I didn't bring it out in the rain and let it mist finely on it. I didn't splash it with my fingertips, splash, splash. No, I dunked it like a donut upside down in a glass of water just once. That's it. Stopped working. Completely stopped working. Now, I didn't follow their instructions. It's not completely my fault because they said, don't get it wet. Which I thought was kind of surprising since they're selling a $60 waterproofing process. They say, don't get it wet. But if you do get it wet, don't try to turn it on. Don't charge it. Take out the battery if you can. It's an iPhone, folks. You can't, obviously. And let it dry for 24 hours before you attempt to use it. And I didn't do that. I turned it on right away. In fact, I turned it on right away. It was working until it stopped. And I'm pretty sure what happened is it short-circuited the screen. Fortunately, you can get it repaired. I did get an email from Brian who said, I watch often and generally enjoy your commentary and shows. However, I was appalled. I was appalled when you dropped your iPhone into a glass of water without giving it a second thought. Oh, Brian, I gave it a second thought. And a third and a fourth. I didn't delay. When the glass of water arrived, I know I dunked it in very quickly because I didn't want to think about it. I just wanted to do it because I knew I had to do it. It was the review. Sure, the process didn't live up to its claims, but do you really have $600 to throw away? It's insulting to see you waste money and act so cavalier when obviously many people are finding it hard to make ends meet these days. Well, I am sorry people are finding it hard to make ends meet. That's true. But, I mean, I've read reviews of this Liquipel, like the Huffington Post. They wrote a review. They said, if it works, this will be great. They didn't try it. Well, of course I have to try it. Otherwise, what's the point of doing a review? So anyway, Brian, I'm sorry that disappointed you that I actually did the dunk it, but I feel that this is my responsibility. And here's the good news. I do believe that for a mere, it's about $100 to replace the screen. For about $100, I'll be able to recover this. We'll see. However, I can't really recommend. If you're getting it liquipelled for waterproofing, and I could see no other reason because it doesn't protect against scratches, dropping it, accident, you know, breaking. I can't see any other reason to do it. It is about waterproofing it. It doesn't work, period. Sorry, Liquipel. I mean, that's just the fact. And I'm really kind of surprised that they're able to sell a product that says waterproof your device. In fact, if you go to the front page of the website, there is, in fact, an iPhone getting dunked. No, waterproof is not the right phrase. What would water resist your iPhone? I don't know what the right phrase is. It ain't waterproof.
Repellent.
It's repellent. Okay, that's good. It's like they Scotch guarded it. That would be, I can understand that. Scotch guard, a nano protective. So if your baby spits up on your phone, then it's good. I could dig that. That I could dig. Let's go to the phones here, starting with Renee in Vancouver, Canada. Hi, Renee. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You want me to push it?
Oh, I thought I pushed it. Hold on, Kyle. I have the technology. Watch. Hi, Renee.
Hi. Are you able to hear me?
I can. I'm sorry.
Awesome. So I have a question for you, and I wondered if I could share a really short tech-related story before I ask.
Sure, I just did.
Okay. So I started listening to you, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and I got interested in technology because of that, through listening to your podcast, and wanted to learn more. So I started volunteering at a really neat group here in Vancouver called Free Geeks.
Oh, that sounds cool.
And
what is Free Geeks?
I just thought I would talk shortly a little bit about it because it's really cool. People take their old computers that they don't want anymore. They donate it to Free Geeks. And then Free Geeks has volunteers who dismantle the computers. The parts that they can't use get recycled, but they get recycled in as environmentally friendly a way as possible. So they're not sending the computers off to be in a landfill in another country. And then the parts that they can reuse, they train the volunteers to build refurbished computers out of the old parts. And then if you do a certain number of hours, they give you 25 hours, they give you one of these refurbished computers. So it's a way for people who don't have income to buy a computer to get a free computer. And they put Linux on it, so all the software
is
free.
That's smart, yeah.
Yeah. And so from doing that, I've built, there's different stations that you go through where you learn different things, but I've built 2 refurbished computers through doing that.
That's awesome. Yeah, you learn something, and somebody who can't afford a brand new computer gets a computer. You know, there are a number of groups like this all over the country, computer recycling places. There's one in the San Francisco Bay Area where I am called the Computer Recycling Center. Free Geek Vancouver is a great idea. Because they say Vancouver, I'm thinking there must be other Free Geek people around the country. Freegeekvancouver.org if you want the website. That's neat.
Yeah, it's a really neat place. So
great idea.
Now, my question is, at work, we have an email distribution list. We get information sent to us that's often of interest to a particular population of people. And then we have sort of a one-way email distribution list that we operate through Outlook, where people subscribe to it by emailing us and telling us they want to be on the list. And we send this information out to them. And over the years, it's gotten bigger and bigger. So there are some limitations to doing this through Outlook. One of them is I have it set up as distribution lists. But when they get too big, I have to split it into another one. So my list is actually 5 lists that I send out.
Let's hang on a little bit, and I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about how you can do this safely. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Right. Renee on the line from Vancouver. Hang on, Renee. We're going to get you in just a second. But right now is the time we speak to my home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson. He's the online editor for Home Theater Magazine at hometheater.com. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Leo. How's it going today?
Ah, it's going good. Today is World Backup Day, says Terry H. So everybody in
the world
should be backing up.
Absolutely. No question about it.
So Scott is not only a home theater expert, but happens to be my home theater guru.
I'm happy to be.
And I was sitting with my son. We were watching TV, and we talked last week about how you know, if you get too far away, the TV's too small. Even a big, and I have a 55-inch TV, but we're more than 8 feet away, and so it really isn't. It's not. In fact, an iPad close to my eyes would be bigger.
Right.
So Henry said, "Well, Dad, let's get a projector." And I said, Scott and I were talking about screen goo last week. This is a paint that you paint on your wall that turns your wall into a screen. It has some reflectivity in it. And
it's very smooth. It eliminates the wall's natural, texture. I mean, if you've got stucco or plaster or even drywall, there is some texture to it, which...
So this will smooth that out, because I do have a little texture on it. So this will smooth that out. They also... it's $259 for a 120-inch screen equivalent. They also sell you flocking black... a frame that you put around it.
Yep.
So I said, okay, son, this is a manly project. You'll help me paint.
Yes.
But then the next thing is I need a projector.
Right.
Now, I don't want to spend $1 million. You can, I know. In fact, you know, if I were Shaquille O'Neal or Tom Cruise, I'd probably have a Runco or one of these high-end $20,000.
Well, yeah, the biggest Runco is $250,000.
Okay. A few hundred thousand between friends. What's the difference?
Exactly.
So I'm not going to get that, obviously.
Yes.
How much do I have to spend to get a decent?
Well, this is a very good question. Up until recently, I would have said you need to spend $3,000, at least $3,000, to get a good quality projector.
But that's for 100-inch or more screen, so that's not bad.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Plus, if you use the screen goo, it's only that's only a couple $100.
Right.
If you wanted to get a good standalone screen of that size, you'd spend between $1,000 and $2,000.
Right.
So the screen goo makes a lot better choice in that regard, in terms of cost. Now, I haven't tried screen goo myself, so...
Well, I'll let you know.
Yeah, if you're going to get it and try it, I really want to know how it works.
Yeah.
But I've been doing a project lately, which is looking at low-cost projectors, projectors under $2,000.
See, that's what I'm interested in.
Okay, well, I do have one recommendation for you.
Oh, good. Let me write this down.
The best one I found so far is the Mitsubishi... HC 4000.
HC 4000.
Yep. Okay. List price of $1,500. $1,495. Which
for
is
a
not
big
bad.
Screen. And can I get to? I mean, 120 inches. Can I make it? That
oh,
big?
Easy.
Easy.
Yeah. Particularly if you set it up properly so that you're getting the right peak white level. You know, the maximum amount of light coming off the screen. Which is less than most people think. But when you do that, of course, you have to watch in a darkened room. So that's another thing to consider is, does your room have...
Yeah, I can make it pitch black. I'm going to make a home theater, right?
There you go. Then projectors are really the way to do that, the best way to do that, because it's the most cinematic type of display.
Right.
I mean, you go to a commercial theater, you've got a projector in the back, and it's shooting onto a screen. Morris in the chat room is saying he has an HC 5500 and it rocks. I haven't looked at that one. It's probably more expensive. But the problem with these little these inexpensive projectors, for the most part, is black level, which is how deep are the blacks
right.
when you're watching Star Trek or Star Wars or most movies have some dark scenes. Plus the letterbox bars. If you have a 16:9 screen and you're watching a 2.35:1 movie, which is what a lot of movies are these days in terms of their aspect ratio, then you've got these black bars on the top and bottom of the image. And if the black level of the projector isn't very low, then you see these black bars. They look more gray, and space looks gray. The other problem is something called shadow detail, which is when you're looking at a dark low light image, and the best one I know is in Master and Commander. You know that movie, right?
Yes. In fact, you've mentioned before you use this.
I use this one.
Movie. It starts in the dark.
Exactly. It starts at night, and one of the very first scenes is a watchman walking under the decks in the lower decks with the crew sleeping in their hammocks.
Right.
And it's very low light, and if the shadow detail is very good, you can see all kinds of detail. Of things, low light things in this room, in this scene. But if the shadow detail is poor, it all sort of disappears into a
murky
solid
black.
Murky black or gray, actually. Now, the Mitsubishi is the best projector, low-cost projector I've found so far for black level. It's still not as good as a $3,000 or better projector can be, but it's better than any other under $2,000 projector I've seen by quite a bit. The shadow detail still isn't very good. That's the only drawback to that projector.
There are a couple of things with projectors that you have to keep in mind. One is noise, because they all have fans, right?
Yes, they all have fans.
And is this not
because they have lamps?
Yeah. Well, that's the other one, is that you have to replace the lamp.
Yeah.
So
every few thousand hours.
Every few thousand hours. So and the lamps are what? $100, $200, $500.
In the case of the low cost projectors, they're more like $100.
Okay.
We just did a digital projection projector from a company called Digital Projection, which lists for $30,000, and its lamp replacement is $800.
Jeez.
And it has two.
Yeah.
It has two lamps.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's the other end of the story.
And how is the fan noise? Is it bad?
Now, on the Mitsubishi, it's quite good.
Oh, good.
They actually tout their low noise level.
All right.
And so it is. It's very low noise, so it's pretty good. You just don't want to sit on the right side of the projector as you're facing the screen, because the heat is evacuated from that side.
Unless you're cold.
Unless you're cold.
Yeah.
Unless it's a cold, rainy day, like I guess it is today in Petaluma.
Now, let me ask a question. What about 4K? Are we going to see 4K projectors?
Yes, we are. Sony already sells one, and we've looked at it. And JVC sells basically a 2K projector in which they do some fancy footwork and simulate 4K. This is a feature called E-Shift. And that's all fine and good, but these are pretty expensive projectors.
Well, since there's nothing in 4K available right now,
that's the
really
point
matter.
Right yeah. now. Yeah. There's nothing in 4K that is available in terms of commercial content, and you can't even shoot your own 4K video, as far as I know. I mean, I guess you could if you bought a 4K camera, which we're going to see at NAB in a couple of weeks.
Right.
But those are expensive, too. You know, you could get an Epic.
Right.
But, you know, that's thousands of dollars.
So I'm looking at on Amazon this Mitsubishi HC 4000 1080p projector is on Amazon $1,134 right now. So
see, there you go. I only look at list prices.
Yeah,
when I
that's good. Things. That's really kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is. Close to $1,000.
Yeah.
You know, again, the only drawback you're going to get on that projector that I saw was a relatively poor shadow detail.
And this is a DLP.
Correct. All these low-cost projectors are DLP. Single chip, which means there's one imager that forms the image, and that's how.
Scott Wilkinson is the home theater online editor at hometheater.com and joins us every week to talk home theater. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
I have no idea what this is.
Listening to surround sound.
That's surround sound. Levinson. There you go. That's Mark Levinson's surround sound right there. I'll explain why we're playing that in a little bit. But first, I owe Renee because she's been hanging on the line while we've been gassing about home theater. Renee, thanks for your patience. I appreciate it.
No problem.
So you want to do a mailing list, basically.
Yeah, and Outlook's a bit limited because there's two of us who manage it, so we have to individually unsubscribe people and add people. Is there
a
solution? That,
yeah, there are a number of companies that do this commercially. It's actually a very challenging thing to do because, as you probably have learned, automated mailing looks like spamming. And you're running a great risk that you're – how big is your list?
Well, we have had no problems around spamming, but we've had it for...
How big is your list?
5 years. Well, it's split up into five parts. I'd say maybe there's 100 or 150
people that's why you split it up, because you're sending it through your own internet service?
Through work.
Yeah, because internet service providers get very upset when you start sending mass mailings out and will cut you off, because they'll think that you are a spammer. So it's generally speaking not the right way to do this.
Okay.
So I'm going to recommend a couple of choices. Of course, there's Constant Contact is a commercial product that a lot of businesses use. And these companies not only do the mail for you, they have tools for designing it so you can have you know, good-looking newsletters, that kind of thing. If there's one called MailChimp that you can actually use for free. It's MailChimp.com.
Okay.
And there are, of course, open source, since you're an open source person. There are many open source solutions for this as well.
We'd be doing it through work. And we could potentially do it through a website at work, too. I don't know if that's...
Well, I think it's better. I think work's going to prefer it if you stop using their internet connection to mail, because I'll be honest, you're running a risk that you're going to get banned by your internet service provider. Or worse, you could get added to what they call a mailing black hole. Like maps or orbs, and that actually could hurt your work, because the work mailing address would then be blocked by internet service providers all over the world. You don't want that to happen, do you?
Nope.
So I would use a mailing service. Try MailChimp, because I think there is a free free version, and I bet you, since you're a nonprofit.
We're a health authority, actually. It's my work.
Free this is for work. This isn't for the Vancouver free geek stuff. Okay.
No, this is for work.
Yeah, work should you should absolutely get a professional package. MailChimp's a great start. Constant Contact is excellent. There are a number of others as well that do a very good job. Keith is on the line with from Rancho Cucamonga. Hi, Keith. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great, and I kept Scott Wilkinson around because I think you want to buy a TV. Is that right?
That's right. I'm actually moving in a couple weeks, and I need a new TV for my living room.
Yay.
I've kind of thought about it. At a minimum, 42, and I think that could be low. 42 inches for the TV.
How far are you going to be sitting from the TV?
I would say about anywhere like 8 to 10 feet.
Okay, I'd get a bigger one if you can.
Yeah, bigger gives you more field of view, right? So it more,
right.
but of course we're used to watching 20-inch TVs. When I was a kid, a 28-inch TV was a huge.
Yeah, 15 feet away.
Yeah, so it's kind of what you're used to. But certainly as big as you can afford. And you know, the good news is they're not that expensive anymore.
Right. I've done some researching and whatnot, but it seems like the more I research, the less I know.
Yeah.
So,
Well, what are your parameters? What are you looking for?
Well, I do gaming, and I watch sports. So the refresh rate is an issue. 120 hertz is standard. That would be, if more, but I've also read reviews that say that anything over 120, it doesn't matter anyway. So, I'm kind of curious, do you have any recommendations on maybe what would be best?
How much ambient light is there in the room? Do you watch during the day much?
There's going to be a lot of light.
So he needs bright, he needs fast. Mm-hmm. It's too bad because for refresh rate, I know Scott would say that plasma is better.
Yeah.
But it's not as bright, and it's not great because it's reflective screens. So
yes, however, on the other hand, most LED or LCD TVs these days, a lot of them anyway, now have shiny screens.
Right.
Because that actually helps lower the black level.
Just like the iPad.
Yes, exactly. So the LCD TVs don't really have that advantage anymore. Not as much as they used to by any means. I would probably suggest a plasma, particularly because in gaming you have a lot of fast action. And you don't want this motion blur to happen. You could get a 120 or a 240 hertz, and I tend to agree 240 probably doesn't make much more difference than 120. But you do want, if you do get an LCD TV, you do want to turn on what's called frame interpolation, which will in fact make the 120 hertz look sharper. However, it also gives you an effect called the soap opera effect, which makes movies look like they were shot on video. So it depends on how important movies are to you. Are you a cinephile?
Well, we're running out of time, so give us a brand. Cut to the chase.
Okay, Panasonic plasmas or Samsung or Sony LCDs, and LED if you can afford it. LED TVs generally I prefer to the conventional, and that's what most of them are these days anyway. So, but
okay.
If I were you, I'd look at a Panasonic plasma.
Okay, great.
Enjoy, Keith.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, for gaming, it's so nice to have a giant screen.
It really is.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to paint the wall, 120-inch screen, have the projector set up, and my son and I will play Call of Duty until our eyes fall out.
That'll be great.
Scott Wilkins, thanks for sticking around. Scott Wilkinson's our home theater editor. He also does a podcast called Home Theater Geeks, which is a really great show if you're really into this stuff. It's every Monday at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern on my Twit podcast network, twit.tv. But the good news is we record it and we TiVo it so you don't have to. So you can get the audio or the video after the fact.
We TiVo it. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, there's no TiVo involved, but we do make a recording of it so you can always download it after. Who is your guest this Monday?
Ooh, this Monday is a very special guest. It's none other than audio legend Mark Levinson.
Oh, you know, my Lexus offered as a very expensive upgrade, and I didn't buy it, the Mark Levinson sound package. So
yes,
he does stereos? What does he do?
He's an audio guy. He does two-channel audio systems. The Mark Levinson system in the Lexus, he's no longer involved with that
company. This was in 2001, so.
Even then, okay.
He's like Betty Crocker. He's a name brand.
Exactly. Yeah, and he's done many other things. He's also a professional musician.
Cool.
So he's going to have a lot of interesting things to say.
High-end audio, the topic on Monday on Home Theater Geeks. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson, online editor for Home Theater Magazine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yay.
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 Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And we're helping you spend your money, helping you buy TVs, computers, cell phones. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you have a question or a comment. If you'd like to find out more about some of the things we're talking about. If you want some decoding of technology. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. April Fool's Day is tomorrow. You know, this is a day that tech journalists hate. Because, at least I do, and I think I'm not alone, because we live in fear of getting pranked. And, you know, your kids pull a prank on you, they short sheet the bed, or they put cellophane over the toilet, or they put salt in the sugar bowl. Don't do that, kids, by the way. That just drives me crazy. But anyway, if they do that, you know, you're embarrassed, they laugh, but it's not the end of the world. The problem is when you're a tech journalist, a lot of tech blogs will publish very credible but completely phony April Fool's stories. And it happens every year. People pick them up and repeat them as if they were the gospel. And it's so embarrassing when you find out you were fooled. Now, I've never done that. But I don't like to do the April Fool's story, so it makes me very nervous. Now's a bad time to surf the net because you'll get bit. There's always April Fool's stories out there. Wow, Google's done every year does a April Fool's joke, which is quite good. First of all, it only seems to be an April Fool's joke at first, and then a true story at first, and then you realize, you know, there's no such thing as, you know, some of the things that they talk about. So this year, I'm sure this isn't the only one, but this year they've done a very funny Google Maps for the 8-bit Nintendo. I think it's a clever idea. You know, the Nintendo NES, which was just 8-bit, didn't have a lot of resolution. But as you know, Google provides services over a wide range of devices,
as
the guy said. So there's a video online you could read. It says one of the lowest
computer systems ever sold. And I'm here to introduce Google Maps 8-bit version as a first product for NES.
So this is Google Maps on the Nintendo. And they put a lot of trouble and time into this video. I highly recommend it.
We run more than 100,000 servers to overcome the NES's technical limitations. 8-bit maps are generated by Google's cloud in real time.
This is one of those things where you watch it, and at first you might kind of believe it, but because they throw so much stuff in.
blow on the cartridge to fix bugs, and you're automatically connected to the internet.
I think it's pretty
Let's start
funny.
From the title screen. Select search and enter a name or place, just like the regular Google Maps.
Another great place to go, Dr. Mom is reminding me, for April Fool's jokes. ThinkGeek.com. Have you ever gone to that site? I love ThinkGeek.com. They sell kind of geek stuff. And let me just see if they've got their April Fool's stuff. This, you know, the funny thing about ThinkGeek is in the past, some of their April Fool's stuff has actually been manufactured. People said, that's actually a good idea. Ah, that's a good idea. We should buy that. Let's see. Here's a Portal 2 inflatable sentry turret. See, I don't know if these are real or not. Life-size 40-inch inflatable turret protects your home and loved ones. See, that could be real, right? Or is it? You don't know. One year they made a Wampa sleeping bag. You know, remember that that scene in Star Wars where they're freezing cold and they make their bed inside a Wampa, a dead Wampa, to keep warm. And they actually made a Wampa sleeping bag with, anyway, I don't know. A Tauntaun? Was it a Tauntaun? It was a Tauntaun. I'm sorry. I'm not up on my Star Wars stuff. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, an April Fool's joke, or maybe you'd like a clarification. Is this real? Google 8-bit maps for NES? Is that real? Arturo on the line from Monterrey, Mexico. Hello, Arturo.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I'm great. Buenos dias. What can I do for you?
Buenos tardes.
Buenos tardes. That's right.
How is your Spanish? Do you want to continue in Spanish?
No. But thank you for offering. My Spanish not so good, as you can tell. But your English is perfect, so go ahead.
Leo, back in April 2009, you might remember that Ray Maxwell called you on your show, and because U.S. Customs incorporated some new changes for pilots flying across the U.S. border. On that time, he was on your show. I've never seen him again in your show. Is he?
He's a great fella. He is out of Vancouver, Canada, B.C., and for a while he did a show for us called Maxwell's House, which I really enjoyed. We just didn't, unfortunately, when even in podcasting, if a show doesn't generate an audience, we can't really afford to keep doing it. We just didn't generate a big audience. We haven't had Ray on in a while, though. I'll bring him back. Absolutely.
Well, anyway, Leo, back in 2009, we created a software alternative to CBP's website, which was very cumbersome. Pilots were complaining about the big headache that it was to fly across the border. And we were
What was the requirement? I don't remember what the requirement is.
Well, you have to send all the information prior to your trip, even if you're going outbound or inbound to the United States.
Okay.
And it was every time you flew, even if you flew repeatedly with the same passengers, you had to put all the information, the passport, address, phone number. It was a big, big headache. And many pilots decided just to stop flying altogether.
I'm not going to cross the border. This was a post 9/11 U.S. requirement, I would guess.
Yeah, and a $5,000 fine if you messed up, and a $10,000 extra fine if you did it again.
And after the second time, they shoot you down on the third. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. So you made an iPhone app for pilots to make this simpler.
Well, yeah, actually, we made the first app, the one you reviewed with Ray, was a software that we developed, and you had to physically install it in your computer. Even it was Windows and it was Mac, and it was not very nice. It was the first version. Then we went to a website, and that became very popular. And this January 2012, we came up with our first iPad, an iPhone app, and it was an explosion of customers coming in to use it.
What's the name, Arturo?
It's called FlashPass.net, and it's a free app, and you can go to our website, FlashPass with the double S, .net. And actually, we give pilots a 30-day trial to test it, and really use it. The big alternative, I mean, the big advantage, obviously, is to be able to file on the road. You don't have to be in front of a computer, and that's very convenient to pilots.
So the iPhone, the iPhone app makes a lot of sense. Do a lot of pilots have iPhones and iPads? I mean, is that a very...
Well, recently there's been some apps that are wonderful for pilots. I'm a pilot myself, and I'm also a geek, so... There's a few apps that come up, and you can do everything online: file a flight plan, check the weather. You can do anything with those apps. So it was the next logical step to make the EAPIS software app that we tried to develop. And actually, this is the only app in the market that does the EAPIS on an actual app. Because there's other companies that do.
I got to run, but thank you for the call. Flashpass.net. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Got to limit the number of plugs per day. Hey, before we go on, I want to talk a little bit about a new advertiser on the show, and one that I am really excited about. It's called Big Commerce. People... like Arturo often ask me, you know, I want to start a business. I have an idea. I want to sell something online. Let me see if I can find the lower third here so that we can show you. There you go. So all the information that you need. This is a Big Commerce, the website. So when I first heard about Big Commerce, I thought, oh, it's a shopping cart. And it's not. It's much, much more. It lets you design a commerce website. And they do everything from web design to accounting to marketing, everything you need for a successful online business. And here's the part I'm very excited about. You've got 2 months free to build a fully functional store, do everything, no cost to you. This is the way. If you've had an idea about, you know, something you'd like to put online, something you'd like to sell, what an opportunity this is. BigCommerce.com. Use the offer code Leo, and you could try it absolutely free. Now, that actually is double the 15-day free trial that they have on there. I think they changed. Did they change the BigCommerce offer to 1 month, not 2 months?
They did change their offer.
All right. So let me correct that and make it 30 days free. But still... plenty of time to find out if you're going to have a success with this. And I have to say, just the chance to play with this is fantastic. BigCommerce.com. There's a 15-day free trial on the website, but click this radio button here and use my name, Leo, and you'll get 30 days. They'll double that time. Give you plenty of time to try it out. BigCommerce.com. And our BigCommerce site is about to go up. You'll find out more. BigCommerce.com. The easiest way to sell online. Mick the Wick, you should be selling your candles there. In the past 2 years, they've driven $750 million in sales for businesses. Most of them small businesses, individuals just creating their own shop. Selling online. There's some great examples. If you read the testimonials, you can see some of the sites that they've been part of. It's really pretty cool. The nice rack. I wonder what he sells. Not what you think. BigCommerce.com. Use my name, Leo.
That sounded like an explosion at the old Simpson place.
Forget it. Two blocks away.
Looks like there's beer coming out of the chimney.
Competing on foot, calling a code 8.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-88-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Andrew Kearney, Nebraska. You're next on the Tech Guy Show. Hi, Andrew.
Yes, sir. Hi, Leo. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
I have a problem with my new iPad.
All right.
I get a message on it. I want to manage my cellular data online. And when I check cellular data, view account, it says service already active. Your iPad is already active on a subscription that cannot be managed.
Right. You have to do that on the web. Now, you want to? Do you want to manage your subscription or just find out what your usage is?
Well, I want to do both.
The usage you can find out on the iPad. If you go to the settings, general, same area that you went to manage it, you'll see there's a usage entry that will tell you exactly how much data you've used in the cellular, sent and received.
Yes, sir. I do see that.
Yeah, yes. that I use because, of course, we're buying a certain amount of data. I bought, I think, 2 gigabytes, and I don't want to go over, so I keep an eye on that. But as far as managing the account, let me just see, because I don't know if you can manage it on there. There's a cellular data entry, and it says view account. Yes. And so when you do view account, it says, no, sorry, you can't do that on here?
Well, that is correct. I get the same picture I see on your screen right now.
You get a login?
I don't get that.
Okay, and you're AT&T or Verizon?
I am Verizon.
Yeah. Well, I just did it on my brand new iPad with the Verizon. It is activated. I need to log in, but I presume if I do, I will be able to see the rest of the stuff. So I think that's a call to Verizon, to be honest, and ask them, because that is what you just described is not normal. You could see the usage. You should be able to log into your account, and I would imagine that you could at least add or decrease the amount of data per month that you're purchasing. Now, you can use that same login, of course, to log in on the web. Maybe that'll work. Give that a try. Eric, Roseville, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how you doing?
By the way, the chat room is saying, Andrew, that they've had the same thing. You need to call Verizon and reset your account. It's just not set up properly. So there you go. Okay, go ahead, Eric.
Hey, I've been trying for about the last year to launch a food and beverage line of products with all the proceeds going towards creating jobs for veterans, and also the products themselves are manufactured by veterans. And what I really need help with right now is I'm in a contest that's sponsored by Walmart, and the winner gets to be in Walmart stores on Walmart.com. And so I need help kind of promoting this via social media. Because this could mean thousands of jobs.
You know,
for
I get requests for promoting events all the time on my Twitter, on my Facebook, and I would spend all of my time tweeting these. Not that it's not a good cause, but frankly, this is not the platform for it, and nor is social media. If you want to take something like this on, you need to promote it. You cannot ask others to promote it for you. Jane, Yorba Linda, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, how are you, Jane?
I'm fine. I'm a little nervous.
Oh, don't be nervous. Take a deep breath.
Okay.
Now what can I do for you?
I have received unsolicited calls from strangers telling me that my computer is compromised, probably has a terrible virus like a Trojan, and they must access my computer.
Interesting. And you were a little bit suspicious of this.
Just a little.
Good. Jane, right on.
That might be good, but I'm not sure my follow-up was so good.
Uh-oh.
But I asked as many questions as I could ask. I was given an innocuous computer company name that meant nothing. Someone who did not sound like Joe Smith. Giving me a name like Joe Smith, and so anyway, I just said, if you contact me by email and I can do some follow-up, fine, otherwise.
Good for you, Jane.
And so
and then you got an email.
No, I did not.
Oh, what a surprise. So you know why? They don't know your email.
Well, I guess, yeah. but I followed up by going to Microsoft because I have Windows XP, but I Googled it, and I went to a tech support number.
Good.
And got a company who said, again, they would have to access my computer by remote.
But in this case, instead of them calling you, you went to Microsoft.com and got a number there.
I think I got it.
I hope you got it from Microsoft.com.
I got it through the link.
Then you're all right.
They assure assured me they were like a partner or a contractor.
That's usually the case, or often the case. When you get support, it's often from a third party that Microsoft or another company contracts with. But you had the right instinct, which was, if somebody calls you and said there's something wrong with your computer, that's a scam call.
Okay.
It's a well-known scam. And what they'll do is they'll walk you through a whole bunch of stuff to kind of demonstrate their adeptness. And they'll tell you, you see, that proves we're right. You've got a lot of viruses. I'm calling from Microsoft.com. And we have found that you have many viruses on your computer. And my name is Joe Smith, and I would like to fix it. But first, you must give me access to your computer. And you were smart. You said, well, I'm not going to do this on an inbound call. Give me your number. Let me go to Microsoft.com. It's a scam. You're absolutely right. Now, you'd be amazed how many people get fooled by this and go, oh, my goodness. But this is how bad guys work often nowadays. It's called social engineering. They scare you by saying, you've got a virus. They do it either by pop-ups on the screen or by calls to your house. They'll access your computer, and guess what they put on your computer if you do that? They put a virus on your computer, and they take your credit card number. So I want to walk through this again. Now, what you did was okay, which is you went to Microsoft.com and got a number from that.
Well, I went to a link that said Microsoft, and
Where did you get this link, though?
Well, I Googled Microsoft.
Okay.
And so the company is not Microsoft.
That doesn't necessarily mean there's a problem.
Okay, I guess that's where I'm concerned, because this company did all of those things that you just described.
It really comes down to, Jane, where you got that number. If you got it from Microsoft.com, and really from Microsoft.com, that's okay. If you didn't, if you just, it's a problem with Googling, right? If you Google,
yeah,
I've got a bug, Microsoft, look at the sites that you go to. Look in the browser. You've got to really get in the habit of looking at the top of the page there, that browser title bar. And if it doesn't say Microsoft.com, it isn't. It could say something like hacker.com/Microsoft. Hang on. I want to help you a little more. Stay here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jane's on the line, and I really wanted to spend a little more time with her because she got a call that many, 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 many people are getting all over the country. These are fake calls from somebody claiming to be from Microsoft or a tech support company saying, usually they're from either China or India, and you'll recognize immediately because they're these big sweatshops where hundreds and hundreds of these people are calling. You know, it's interesting. Somebody did a little research, and it turns out in many cases, these are the same people who do tech support for real. And there's some downtime, so they have these calls going out, and they get paid for every computer they can get this malware on. Or maybe it isn't malware. Maybe they're just trying to make some, $50. Because, of course, part of this deal is I'll fix your computer, but you have to give me a credit card. So, Jane, you had the good sense not to fall for this, and I'm glad. But you were convinced enough that you said, maybe I better get my computer checked. Right?
But I'm not so sure that the company I called isn't one of the scam artists.
What's the name of the company you called? Generally, it won't be a number you can call at all, by the way.
Oh, well, I have been able to call them.
Yeah, so that seems more likely to be legitimate. Did they give you a name?
They did give me a name. It's VTech.
V-T-E-C-H?
Yes, okay. Hyphen, V-hyphen.
V-hyphen tech. And what did he have you do?
Well, they accessed my computer by my logging in with them, and they worked on my computer. It was supposed to be a couple of hours. It was probably 6 or 7 hours.
Wow.
On Thursday, and about the only thing I could tell is that they were actually removing programs. And they insisted that I didn't have proper security, and they installed McAfee. And after that was done, they rendered my computer totally inoperable.
Oh, no.
I could do nothing. My computer's really old, just like me.
So they broke it.
And so it didn't work. And so I finally got them back, and yesterday spent many more hours with a very nervous young technician who finally uninstalled everything and basically put my computer back to where it was.
Good. Did they charge you for this fine service?
Yes.
How much?
Don't ask.
Not much, I hope. All right, but they got it back, right?
Well, yes, they got it back. And so it seems to be working okay, but what I supposedly bought was a service contract with this company,
yeah,
which I'm going to try to get out.
I don't think this is necessarily a bad company. I would like to know kind of where the number came from, but generally speaking, these scammers don't have a phone number you can call.
Well, that was one thing in their favor, I thought. They've been available to me.
Yeah, that means that they're probably okay. Now, whether they're a good company is debatable, since the first thing they did was completely make your computer unusable.
I explained to them it was my computer was very old, and when they finally looked up the RAM on my computer, I guess it probably wasn't enough to support McAfee.
Well, they should have known that.
And they should have known that.
Yeah. Is it VTech Squad?
Let me see. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, these guys are all right.
Oh.
I mean, sort of all right. I mean, they're at least legitimate. They're not scammers.
Okay. Well, I did tell them that I was planning to buy a new computer.
Jane, what do you use your computer for?
Just, you know, for... of course, for emails. I do lots of research. Anything I want to know, I ask my computer.
Yeah.
I do some online shopping. I do...
Can I invite you to buy an iPad next time?
Well, I was going to buy... it's the iPad. I wanted to buy a desktop. Is that the iPad?
No, the iPad is just a... I'm telling you, Jane, I think you'll like it. It's small. It's portable. You carry it around. It's a tablet. Doesn't have a keyboard. It has an on-screen keyboard. But it lets you do all the things you just described just fine. It has a browser, has an email program. It's $500. And it's completely secure.
Well, that was my reason for wanting to go to a Mac.
Yeah, I would at least get a Mac. I wouldn't get a Windows machine, but I think an iPad. You know, my mom for years used, I would get her computer after computer. She used a Mac for a while. For a while, I gave her a Windows machine. I locked it down so it was secure. And finally, you know, she has a laptop, nice Mac laptop, but I also gave her an iPad, and now she's just, well, that's all she'll use. Same, you know, many of my friends. I think this is really a good, here's what I would do. You're in Yorba Linda. There's an Apple store nearby. Go to the Apple store and play with it. Ask. They're very nice there. Say, look, tell them the story. They'll love it. They'll say, oh, yeah, we got to get you off that computer. And say, I don't know whether I should buy a computer or, you know, a desktop, a laptop, or an iPad. I think for what you do, an iPad will be great. And it's portable. You can sit in a comfortable chair, put it in your lap. You can do all the things you do. It's just, I think it's a better solution for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have been in that Apple store.
Yeah.
Wasn't brave enough to buy the first one in there.
Well, it's going to, you know, any computer you buy is going to be roughly $500. You could get a cheaper computer, but you don't want to save too much money at this point because much cheaper is going to be pretty low end.
Yeah. The desktop Macs are much more than $500.
Yes. They're very, they started at $1,200. So I think an iPad, frankly, is a great solution. Now, how do you get on the Internet?
How?
Do you have Internet access, obviously, yeah?
I do, yeah. When you say, how do I get on?
Yeah.
I get through Internet Explorer.
Okay, and you have a Wi-Fi setup, or how do you, or is it plugged into the wall? Or?
It's a desktop, and it's I have DSL.
Okay. So when you're at the Apple Store, they're going to ask you that. And you could either have a Wi-Fi. This will not connect to the DSL router, so you'll either have to have a wireless Wi-Fi box, which they'll sell you also. Or you can, for $25 to $30 a month, just get rid of your DSL. It's a little more expensive, but have the iPad have its own Internet access, and it's just wherever you are, it'll work. So there's your two choices, but it does not connect up to that DSL modem, so that way is going to add. They'll help you do that. The one thing that Apple's got down is support.
Well, I will get myself to the Apple Store.
I think this is a really good choice for you. I think you'll call in 6 months and say, boy, this is a lot easier.
Okay. And thanks for letting me know about the VTech squad, because that was really my concern, is did I get myself into another scam that going to compromise my security?
Right. No, thank you for calling, and thanks to the chat room for pointing me to the VTech squad. They are, in fact, Microsoft certified professionals. They do exactly this. Probably the real issue is it's such an old computer, there wasn't much they could do.
Okay.
All right. I would still cancel that service contract.
I'm going to try, and
yeah.
I think they will.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
Okay.
Tell them they got a big plug on the radio show. They're probably listening right now, actually.
I will do that.
Yeah, vtechsquad.com. Thanks, Jane.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care. I want to spend some time on that. This is a well-known scam, and I want to reiterate, if somebody cold calls you and says, well, pretty much anything, you know, from a charity to a tech support guy, just say no. Just say no. No, Microsoft does not cold call people with computer problems. They don't do it. They don't do that. But scammers do. And they dial random numbers. That's why I was. That's why they don't have a number. You can't call them back. They probably can't even call you back, and they certainly can't email you because they don't know who you are until they break into your computer and steal everything. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I have a hard time plugging this company because, you know, of course, they did, in fact, kind of manipulate this woman into a long-term contract. But not necessarily a bad thing to do. I mean, they want to help her. The truth is, the best thing they could do is tell her to buy an iPad, but that's not going to help them, right?
We used HD faces, and I got to know them. I got to meet them. You see the body language. You see smiles. You see.
And then they ruined her computer, which is not. But I think that's because, for all we know, that computer was laden with problems. In fact, I would guess it is.
Now you can even do it on the go with the built-in camera on your iPad and the free GoToMeeting app. So I really want you to.
Yeah, in general, I'm not a big fan of these kinds of things. Hey, let me quickly tell you about Stamps.com before we get on to the next caller. I'm going to put now, let's see, the Stamps.com lower third up. Stamps.com. Turns your desk into the post office, minus the surly employees. No, actually, I like the post office people. I've always had a thing for the mail carrier, right? Because they bring you stuff that's cool. Stamps.com doesn't mean you don't see your mail carrier. In fact, you might see more of your mail carrier. So what Stamps.com does, it lets you print postage at its base. But it's more than that. In fact, if you take advantage of their no-risk trial offer right now, you'll get a USB scale that will make sure you always have exactly the right postage on your packages. They'll give you $55 in free postage just to try it out and a 4-week trial. Stamps.com, but you got to use the offer code TECHGUY. And if you see my face, then you got it right. Stamps.com, use the offer code TECHGUY. It'll say, welcome, Leo Laporte listener, and all of that stuff. So the idea, Mac or PC, is it's software that you run that prints out the postage. It's an indicia, which is something the post office supports. In fact, they love Stamps.com so much, you get discounts you can't get at the post office. They want you to use it. Saves the post office money. You don't go in the post office anymore. So anything you could do at the post office, you can do with Stamps.com, and including mail large packages. They will do a free pickup. The post office will do a free pickup. Of course, your regular mail carrier can pick it up also. They do international mail. They'll even fill out the forms for you. Certified mail, same thing. 21% discounts up to 21% on express mail and 15% on priority mail. So it saves you money. If you're an eBay seller, you know about Stamps.com. They all use Stamps.com. It's the best way to do it. So get this $110 bonus offer, the digital scale, the $55 free postage, all of that. Just use my name. Actually, don't use my name. Use Tech Guy at stamps.com. If you run a small business, we live on stamps.com. We love it. Why buy stamps? I mean, that's kooky. Print them as you need them and no more. stamps.com. They're nice. They're a good sponsor, too. We're really, they've been very supportive, not only of the radio show, but now of the podcast. We've got them on Before You Buy and some of our other shows, and they're just great. It's a really nice company. I've been working with them for years. First as a customer, then as an advertiser. Stamps.com. Why should Becky buy stamps? What, and what, more importantly, why shouldn't I ask her about that? You know, it's funny. If you're listening, as obviously that person in the chat room is, on the podcast, you hear far fewer ads than you would if you were listening on the radio. Two, in fact. The Stamps.com scale is not waterproof, and I'm not liquipelling it.
All right, 9:32 live read, Leo.
Okay, thanks.
No, thank you, please. It only makes me sneeze. Then it makes it hard to find the door.
Oh, yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Phone number 8888. Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. Janissa is on the line from Riverside, California. Am I saying that right? Janissa?
Janissa.
Hi, Janissa.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Wonderful. Welcome to the show.
Okay. I have a virus on the computer. I don't really know how it got there. I didn't go anywhere unusual. Just I turned off the internet one day, and there was all these messages telling me to buy some security program. Obviously bogus. So
good.
I worked on getting rid of it for a while.
Well, now, wait a minute, because that bogus message that you have a virus is also bogus. Doesn't mean you have a virus just because you saw that message, right? That's how they get you to buy the fake security program, is they say, well, you've got a virus, but it doesn't mean you have a virus.
Yeah, I know. Okay. But wait a minute, isn't a virus what's making the message?
No, not necessarily.
Oh, well, it was even there when the internet was off, so I just assumed.
Oh, yeah, that may be then, yeah.
Okay, well.
So you saw that even when you weren't online, but see, here's the problem. You're running Windows, right?
Yes.
How did I know? And what version of Windows are you running?
XP Surface Pack 3.
Surface Pack 3, but you still run Windows Update all the time, right? You make sure it's always updated, right?
Yeah. Yes, all the time.
Yeah. So that's good. That means, first of all, that you don't have any exploitable holes in your system. So the reason that Microsoft does these updates is they patch little holes that would let bad guys in without your knowledge, without you doing anything. Now, bad guys can still get in, but they require some cooperation on your part. The patches make sure that they can't get in without your knowledge. In effect, the only way somebody can infect your computer is by getting you to run a program, either by using a hole in Microsoft Windows that lets them run that program, or tricking you. And that's what those little pop-ups are. We're going to trick you into buying. First of all, they get money. They get your credit card number. And then the thing that you bought is a virus. So they win all around. So you're smart not to fall for that. But now, those pop-ups that you see come to you from websites usually. But you're right. It could be there's a program running on your computer. But my question is, how did it get there? Because you keep it up to date, right?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. So, I mean, okay. I'm encouraged that you probably don't have anything. What, you said you saw that pop up when you were shutting down?
Well, no, when I turned the internet off and the computer was, you
how
know,
do you
not
turn, just out of curiosity, how do you turn the internet off?
Well, I don't have a lot of money.
Do you have a big switch on the internet? What do you do?
No, we still have dial-up, and we have
AOL. I get it. So you hang up.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've been using AOL. That could, by the way, be the source of this stuff. We'll talk about that in a minute. So you're using AOL. You're done. You've done your online session. You close AOL. You hang up. Hang up. We're done. And then you still, you're using your computer, and then something will pop up after that?
Yeah, so I closed it, and then it came back again, I closed it, came back in. I said, oh, great. I know what's going on here.
Is the AOL program still running?
No. But I turned it back on, and I went to a tech support site, and I followed all their instructions for a few days, and the pop-ups were gone, and I thought everything was back to normal. But on this site, they always have me do some follow-up stuff, and even when it looks like the virus is gone. And one day while I was in the middle of trying to do that, the computer gave me some message, but I was there so fast, I don't remember what it said, and it turned off. And then when I tried to turn it back, you know, on my account, you know, run it normally, everything was going really slow, and then everything disappeared. Set my background picture, you know, decoration picture. It was completely empty except for that.
Yeah, something went wrong. Yeah.
And it said this message about there's no virtual memory space or whatever.
Yeah.
So I went to safe mode, and I ran another virus scanner, and it came up clean, and I just didn't get what was going on. And now,
well, you're pretty smart, Janissa. You're doing all the right things. So you went into safe mode, you scanned it, and nothing showed up.
Yes.
And it was an up-to-date antivirus, right?
Yes.
Okay. There's a couple things I'll give you. I think you may not be infected. I think you may have other problems with your computer. For instance, it's an older computer. The hard drive might be failing. That's not an uncommon problem. But a couple of things you can try. So Microsoft puts on your computer without probably letting you know, but it's on every computer, something called their malicious software removal tool, MRT. And they update this every month. When you do the second Tuesday of the month Windows update, they update that. And they run a quick scan, but they don't run a thorough scan. So something anybody who's using Windows can do and probably should do every once in a while, click the Start button. And then there should be on the Start menu a Run entry, unless somebody's disabled that. As long as you can see that, then Start and click Run, and the box will open up, and you can type a command. This is a command line. And here's the command you're going to type. Just three letters, MRT, and hit Return. MRT, Malicious Software Removal Tool. I don't know where the S went. MRT. What will happen is a program you've never seen before will pop up, and it'll say, do you want to do a quick scan or a thorough scan? Do the thorough scan. Now, this is up to date because Microsoft updates it every month, so it knows about all the malware that's out there. And if it runs and it's clean, then I think you're all right. The fact that you ran your antivirus in safe mode and it was clean, I have high hopes for you. However, it may be there's other problems with the computer. The hard drive may be starting to fail. And that's probably why you stopped seeing the desktop and things like that. I do hope you're doing the updates. If you do the updates every month, I know, especially on dial-up, that probably is crazy. Because these are big downloads. I think that, unfortunately, Microsoft doesn't really expect anybody to be on dial-up anymore. And they'll give you hundreds of megabytes worth of updates. And, you know, that's just not practical. So I hope you are doing those updates. Everybody needs to do those updates. And MRT, if you have been doing the updates, should give you a pretty good idea. There are other programs you can run. The chat room always likes me to mention Malwarebytes, and I'll mention it. M-A-L-W-A-R-E. M-A-L-W-A-R-E-B-Y-T-E-S.org. Malwarebytes.org. And they have a little program called Malwarebytes. It's another malware finder. It's safe. You can download and run that. If everything comes up clean, then you just need your hard drive's failing. And you either need to buy a new hard drive or scan it and figure out what's going on. And, you know, you might want to get DSL Extreme. Get some high-speed internet. That'll help, too. You know, I think DSL Extreme now is $12.95 for the first year. $12.95. That's pretty good. You're not going to get much cheaper than that. Bob and Tustin, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Leo. Guess what? I've got ESET already.
Yeah.
So that's not
good.
That wouldn't be my problem.
That's not why your computer's slowing down, then.
No. But the thing is, I have a lot of friends, and they usually call me when they have problems with their
computer.
Well,
hold on then, Bob. We're going to take a break, but right after the news, okay. You'll be first, okay? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love doing that. Well, hello. How are you? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, anything on your mind. If it's got a chip in it, I'd like to talk to you about it. Questions, comments, suggestions, recommendations. All welcome. Bob in Tustin, California, we had to take a break, but thanks for hanging on. So
sure.
You're using Nod 32. That's good.
Yes. I recommend it to my friends.
Oh, yeah.
I took your advice several years ago, and I've had it ever since. So
very lightweight, but it's very effective. They're a sponsor, we should mention. But the good thing about that, when I hear somebody say that, is I know, well, it's unlikely that you have any infections on your system. So what's going on with your system?
Well, it's not just me. It's actually friends that get in touch with me, and I usually help them with repairing whatever's going wrong with their computers. And one of the things that I've had a little trouble with is when they've had the computer for like 2 or 3 years, it gets quite slow. It slows down. And I've gotten several things that I've been able to learn to do to help speed it up a bit. One of the things was I was recommended by a friend, Advanced System Care, which seems to be working to help a little bit. And another program that's free called Smart Defrag 2, and that helps to kind of get things running a little better. Other than that, cleaning out the start menu to uncheck the programs that are starting up when the computer turns on. And other than that, I can't really, without just replacing all the software and restarting over, reformatting the disk and reinstalling all the programs, I can't figure out anything else to do.
A couple of the things you're doing are, in my opinion, voodoo on a modern computer. So Advanced System Care is what we call a registry cleaner. And then you're defragging, you're optimizing the disk. The truth is, as you use a computer, it slows down. And there are a couple of things that are big that can make the difference. In Windows' case, it's just, you know, sometimes it's called bit rot. It just happens over time. You install stuff, you take stuff off, and so forth. People like to do things that make them feel good. You know, my car seems to run better after the car wash. It really does. Feels like the engine's smoother. It's a little peppier. There's a huge psychological component, and I believe it's exactly the same as that with a registry cleaner and a disk defragger. Modern operating systems don't need disk defraggers. The disk defragger really became popular with Windows 95 because Windows 95 was such a lousy operating system, had such a terrible file system, FAT32, that it would spread stuff all. The drive would get fragmented and messed up, and so you could optimize it. You know, some people would optimize every day, maybe quarterly, and it could make a difference. But if you're using NTFS, if you're using any modern version of Windows from XP on, it's much less of a concern. Same thing with OS X. Modern operating systems know about fragmentation and avoid it. Registry cleaning is very much voodoo. The premise being that you've got this registry, which is a terrible idea, but Microsoft stuck with it, unfortunately, because every program uses the registry. And if they took it out, even in Windows 8, yeah, we're going to have a registry because if they took it out, nothing would work. So what it is a giant blob, and I mean blob, that is not a text file. It's not readable. You have to use a special program to look at it that contains settings for every program and the operating system on the computer. And they're all just jammed in there. And it is true that often when you delete a program or uninstall a program, it doesn't clean up the registry. So there may be stray entries in there. Now, if your registry has gotten to be 4 gigabytes, well, certainly it's gotten too big and that's a problem. In fact, Windows will warn you. But that's not typical. Most often people use registry cleaners because it's aesthetic. They don't like the idea that this registry will contain entries for things they don't have anymore. It's completely harmless. And in fact, it's risky to clean the registry because an automated registry cleaner can accidentally delete things you need and break your system. So companies like IOBIT, which makes Advanced System Care and CCleaner and these others, they're very conservative about what they delete from the registry because they don't want to break your system, which makes them even less useful. It's voodoo. You might as well pluck a chicken and dance in a circle three times. It's good, and then you'll feel just as good. Or maybe get your car washed and it'll run better. There are things that do go bad. I got to say, there are things that do go bad. Mostly what it is your hard drive. And frankly, a lot of times a computer gets very slow because the hard drive itself, I would say this is the number one cause, certainly the number one undiagnosed cause. The hard drive itself, as it ages, sometimes you get sectors that are hard to read. And the operating system tries. And while it's trying, it's not doing anything else. Now, eventually it'll give up, but often these are sectors that are sort of okay. So the operating system might try four or five times, get it, go on. But just think about it. It's not doing anything else while it's doing that. It's so that it feels like it's laboring. And you can often tell, you listen to it, you'll hear the hard drive going, it's trying to read these sectors. That really can slow your system down. So that's problem number one. A big problem these days, of course, is malware on your system, because what that is essentially is somebody else's program running in the background, slowing you down. So if you're not running Nod 32 and you're not, maybe you've got teenagers using your computer, or you yourself are not extra careful about where you get files from, then that would be a cause for concern. But I don't think that's the case with you, Bob, or your friends. Well, maybe it is with your friends. We don't know how good your friends are about this, right? My tech expert friends who do help others, I try to stay out of this, we'll go over. My friend Steve Gibson, who's a hard drive expert, will go over to a friend's house. Friend has teenagers. I've done this myself, and it's a mess. The computer's loaded with viruses, loaded with stuff. It's just a mess. At that point, your best bet is to do what your instinct says is the right thing to do, which is back up your data first. Format the hard drive and reinstall Windows. In almost every case, that's the one and only thing that makes a big difference. And if you have a hard drive with some bad sectors, if you can run a low-level scan on it, CheckDisk is okay. Steve's program, SpinWrite's better. But if you can run a low-level scan on it, map those bad sectors out, then reinstall Windows, update it, reinstall the apps, but only those apps you want right now. Don't fall for that trap of, I'm going to install every app I ever had. Because that's another reason things slow down. You got too much stuff. But your computer should run just as fast as the day it came home if you just reinstall Windows. So that's the only voodoo I recommend. Registry cleaners are risky. And if they're cautious, they don't do any good. A modern operating system does not need to be defragged. So any apparent speed boost from defragging is psychological. I wouldn't worry about that stuff. I would start over, and that's about it. And Ricardus is saying, I've used Advanced System Care. Don't use the Turbo Boost feature. Turn off Turbo Boost. You know what? Don't use it at all. You don't need it. It doesn't do anything, and it runs a risk of messing it up. I don't use any of these programs, and you shouldn't either. Bonnie in Agoura Hills, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for taking our call.
All right.
So I'm actually going to hand you over to my husband because he is the electronics expert in the house.
And, you're the on-hold specialist and he's the call questioner, right?
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, Bonnie, your job is not done. We have to take a break. Hang on. We'll get back to you and your husband in just a moment. Bang, bang. I can do that myself, you know. Well, wait a minute. That's a terrible line. the memories. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Where'd you find that, Kyle? Kyle Benham, my musical and modem director.
It's just our internet connection here.
He says this is the new Premier Radio Network's internet connection. High speed, 56K. Oh, I don't miss those days. I really don't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. Bonnie is on, actually, well, Bonnie was holding. Now, is it her husband or is it Bonnie on the line now?
It's still Bonnie. I'm going to hand you over to Alan, okay, Leo?
Okay, thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Alan.
Leo, how are you?
Alan, you owe your wife dinner for holding on for all that time.
Yeah, indeed I do. Thank you for letting me know about that.
My pleasure. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Except for the fact that I just bought the Apple TV, the second generation.
Yes.
And everything I'm hearing, it doesn't play well with UVerse.
I've never tried it with UVerse. I don't know why it shouldn't, unless UVerse is somehow blocking it. It's just all it needs is a regular internet connection. Have you had problems?
Yeah, it just will not show up in my devices list, and I've tried everything. You know, there's a lot of forums on the internet, and I've tried everything. And even yesterday, the last thing I tried was when I plugged the Apple TV directly into the set-top box, because they said then that would work as a node. Does that make sense?
Okay, so the Apple TV, let me back up a little bit, and you can explain to me what you're trying to do. The Apple TV is a little hockey puck-sized device. I have the new one as well, and I love it, that has two ways of connecting to the internet. It needs to be on the internet. What it really is an internet interface for your television. That's all it really is. So as HDMI out, that goes to your TV, and then it has an Ethernet port. That would plug into your router. Or Wi-Fi, which would use your Wi-Fi access point. Are you using Ethernet or Wi-Fi on your Apple TV?
I tried both. It's currently on Ethernet.
When you tried Wi-Fi, did you? What happened when you tried Wi-Fi?
I mean, everything works perfectly well, but it won't show up in my devices list.
What devices list is this? I don't understand.
On iTunes.
Ah. So you have a computer running iTunes, also on the same network.
Correct.
But it's not seeing your Apple TV.
That's correct.
All right, you need to go in the Apple TV settings and turn on home sharing.
Which I've done.
Okay. And you still don't see the Apple TV. Now, how is your computer connected? Is it Wi-Fi or Ethernet?
Wi-Fi as well.
It's Wi-Fi.
That's Wi-Fi as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what would you like to do? Are you going to use AirPlay, or what are you going to do?
Correct, for AirPlay.
Oh, okay. Well, that's... So, all right. So, you're looking at your iTunes window, and in the lower right-hand corner, there's a funny little square with a little triangle on it. You're talking about that list right there? The AirPlay?
Correct.
You click that,
showing up there.
And you don't see Apple TV there.
That's correct, yes.
In iTunes.
In iTunes, that's correct, yes. It didn't show up. Well, I've got an iPhone, that shows up there, that's correct, you know. So everything's showing up that we do have except the Apple TV.
Do you... All right. Slayer Dork's giving me a link to an Apple Tech Note. I'm looking at the chat room. We're trying to figure out what's going on. So now it's the iTunes not seeing the Apple TV, not vice versa, right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. All right, let's see. This tech note is from a couple of years ago, so it's a preview. When you say the second generation, you mean the second generation of the hockey puck?
Yeah, the very small black one.
The
yeah.
brand new one that just came out, or the one previous to that?
The brand new one.
Brand new one. Yeah, it's the third generation, I guess, yeah.
Oh,
all
okay.
right, so verify that you have the latest version of iTunes, correct?
I have done that, yeah.
And you've updated the firmware on your Apple TV?
Yes.
And you're using OS X Lion?
This is a PC.
Oh, it's a PC.
Yeah.
It's a PC. Are you running any security software on your PC?
I am. I'm running ADBG.
Yeah. It's possible that the firewall is blocking the technology that the Apple TV uses to show up on the network. It's called Bonjour. And
okay.
I would try disabling the firewall at least temporarily, or disable AVG temporarily, to see if you'll. I think that's almost certainly it.
I will give that a try. Thank
yeah.
you.
And if that ends up being it, then what you'll probably want to do is open a specific port on the security software so that Bonjour will work. I'm not a big fan of AVG anyway, so you might find something better. Almost certainly, this is actually very common. It happens in Windows, and this is what threw me at first because I didn't realize you were running Windows on the Mac. It doesn't happen as much because the Apple folks understand that we're going to need to keep this port open. But on Windows, if you're running security software, very frequently it blocks network access from devices. Of course, that's what a security program does, right? Keeps other guys from getting into your computer. Well, in this case, you want to allow it. So you'll need to let the firewall know, hey, if it's the Apple TV, that's okay. And it's likely that you'll do that by a port number, and I'm not sure which port to use. But you could Google that. The Bonjour port has to be open. The Bonjour. Why did they choose such a terrible name? You got to open the Bonjour port. Also in Windows. Yeah, I'm just looking, and I don't see a port number. I'm sure somewhere they've got the port number listed. Good luck, and thanks for calling. 8888-ASK. Leo's the number. Sharon is in Ozarks, Missouri. Hello, Sharon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Oh, I'm so glad I'm getting to talk to you.
I'm sorry it took so long to get to you. I had such urgent issues we had to get to.
Yes, and mine's kind of hokey. I've been listening to you since before I left California.
Oh, so this is a move. You moved to the Ozarks.
I escaped.
Is it beautiful?
It is the best.
Oh, how
it's
nice!
If you like outdoors, you know.
Oh yeah.
And hunting and hiking and stuff.
Fantastic.
But I got a silly question for you.
Okay. Sure.
I was wondering. I was looking for free downloads of, like, you know, various things for like photo stuff, but not like Photoshop and Windows and stuff because they're so expensive.
Yes.
And I found Serif, Serif.
Yeah.
And they do. I'm wondering, are they okay? They're free downloads. Because
Serif has been around for a long time.
Okay.
That's good software. I'll give you another. If you like Serif, they're a British company. I think you'll like Uleed. Yes. Ulead. Also similar, where they offer inexpensive Photoshop replacements. What do you want to do with your photos?
I just want to tweak stuff. I'm very, very low key. I just kind of play around. That's the reason why I didn't want to spend like hundreds.
Yeah, no. Now, by the way, Photoshop Elements, which is the basic version of it, is only $80, and that's a good solution. But the other one that's free I would try is Picasa from Google, PICASA.com. We were talking before the break about alternatives on Windows to Photoshop. And there are, of course, lots. Chat room started coming up with a bunch of them. But I forgot to mention a great website that everybody should know about. If you're looking for an alternative to an expensive program, there's a site called Alternative2.net. Alternative2.net lets you choose a program and then find out what the other choices are in the same category. And they mention Paint.net, which is a really cool free program that does a lot of great photo editing. I highly recommend that. This is for Windows. But on Windows and Mac, I think Picasa is probably a very good choice. It's free. Ties into Google services. It is a Google program. They bought it. PICASA. And it's an excellent choice. I think you'd be very happy with it. Free, no need to buy anything. If all you're doing is, you know, red eye reduction, cropping, rotation, enhancement, you know, brightening or darkening photos, it's all you need, really. Roger in Michigan, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Roger.
Hey, Leo, how's it going today?
It's going very well. How are you?
Doing well. Hey, I've got a SATA drive that I'm trying to put in an XP machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's got SATA on the motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I can't find any drivers to get it to be recognized in XP.
Because you don't need in XP, huh?
Yes.
Okay, so the hardware that you're using, did it come with XP?
Yes.
So I would think that since it is a SATA computer that XP should be able to see. You don't need drivers for SATA. On the other hand, XP, I'm not sure. Let me ask the chat room, because I don't remember when SATA became common. Was it after XP came out? XP is now 10 years old, after all.
Yeah, I realize that.
Yeah. Well, no, that's nothing wrong with it. I like XP. I'm just looking
because,
to see.
Okay, it recognizes it in the BIOS, but it does not recognize it any other place.
Right.
And now I can put a Linux version on there, and it recognizes it in Linux.
Right. Well, the hardware supports it. Linux has the BIOS. I don't think XP had a problem, but I have found an article that says that the drive controller, the advanced host controller interface hardware mechanism, sometimes can have a problem in XP. In fact, any OS older than Vista or Linux kernel 2.6.19. So, you want to use the version of Windows that came with your computer because it should have that driver, the AHCI driver built in. If you don't have the OEM XP CD, then it gets a little more tricky. I'll tell you what, this is kind of complicated. It's from mydigitallife.info. I'll put a link to this in the show notes, in the chat room, and then we'll put it in the show notes. And you can follow up on this article, which gives you some solutions. It could also be a BIOS issue. So maybe you want to set the SATA mode to IDE in the BIOS. Now we're getting geeky, aren't we? I thought I'd never have to answer questions like this again. Next, it'll be interrupt request conflicts. Coming up on the next Tech Guy Show, Scott in New Orleans, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
I've been watching you since the screensavers.
Ah, the good old days. That was back in the days of IRQ conflicts.
Yeah, call for help, stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, oh, yeah. We had lots of questions like that back then.
Yes, sir, sure did. That's what made me think about it. I have a question. Before I get to my question, I have an iPad. I heard you the other day having problems that you said you didn't like about it. One was the keyboard not having capital letters or lowercase letters when you hit
the ship. I don't have any problem with the iPad. I think the iPad is excellent. I just think that sometimes people say, oh, Apple, they can do no wrong. And so occasionally I bring up things that show that Apple clearly can do wrong. And an example of this, and it certainly doesn't bother me, I can live with it, but it's just an example. On Android, on any normal cell phone operating system, the keyboard goes lowercase when you're in lowercase mode, uppercase when you press the caps lock. Doesn't do that on iOS. It's always in uppercase. And I guess it's because they want to look like a regular keyboard, which is always in uppercase. But the reason the regular keyboard's always in uppercase is because it's a physical keyboard. You can't. But in software, you can. And I just love the idea that by looking at the keyboard, you'll know if you're in caps lock or not. And you can't on an iOS keyboard. It's just a silly little thing. I'm just pointing out that others sometimes do a better job than Apple.
It's a little aggravating to me as well, but this is a problem. I watch your Twit program live on my iPad, and I cannot, when it's not the most upfront screen window, it pauses your feed.
That's because you're watching in Safari, right?
Correct.
So that is just it's nothing we can do about it. Safari won't multitask video in the background. Now, if you're listening to the audio, it will. And if you use our Twit app, the audio will continue. But not if you're watching the video. The video just stops. So there is an iOS app. Yeah. It's on the App Store. It's called Twit. And I think it's 99 cents.
That'll let me watch your video. I can watch your video.
Yeah. It's called TwitPad. Houdini 7, the guy who wrote it, Craig Mullaney of Shift Key Software, is in our chat room on a regular basis. And he's not me. It's not something we created. He's a third party, but he did a great job of it. It's called TwitPad. So search for TwitPad. I guess it's $2.99, you'll find that, and it's well worth it. And it will continue to play the audio after you if you switch to something else.
Okay.
Correct, because when I'm listening, when I'm watching your the feed, I cannot switch and watch the chat room. That's the most aggravating thing about it. Or when you mention
TwitPad has a chat room built into it. That makes it even easier.
Oh, nice, sweet. Yeah. Well worth the money.
Oh yeah. And, it's a nice little program that I'm very grateful to Craig for writing. And he said, "Can I? Would you mind if I charged?" I said, "Craig, no. You put a lot of work into it. Go ahead and charge. That's fine."
Okay. Well, my question is all for the Apple, and I'm more of an Android person. I have an older Android cell phone that I was kind of wanting to know if could I legitimately root it now? It's not under warranty anymore.
You could anyway. You know, Google doesn't discourage that. Rooting is a little risky, however, and I'll explain what rooting is and how to do it and all of that stuff. So on iPhones, they sometimes call it jailbreaking. And what that does on iOS, on an iPad or an iPhone, it means you can buy apps from somebody besides Apple. That's all. On Android, it's a little different. It's like a real operating system. And you probably know this. On real operating systems, you can either be a limited user, or you could be a super user, an administrator. Sometimes they call it root. Normally, on an Android phone, you're not given root access because a root can do anything, including delete key files, really mess up your phone. And if you are operating a computer, including a smartphone, with root permissions, then any program you run has the same permissions. So that makes it a security vulnerability as well. Any program that was malicious that you ran on your Android phone with root permissions would be able to do anything, including erase the entire phone. So, it is a risky thing to do, however, not a bad thing to do. I do it all the time, and I'll explain how to do that when we come back. We also have the GizWiz coming up, our gadget guru. Stay right here. Let's do the time warp again. So our caller was asking, how do you root an Android phone? And the best thing to do is to go to the XDA Developers Forum. It's xda-developers.com. And search for the model of the Android phone you have, and they'll give you instructions. It's generally fairly easy to do. Newer phones will be more tricky. In fact, may not be rootable. Again, be careful, because once you root it, you're giving your phone root permissions, and that means anything that's running on your phone, including malware, will have access to the entire phone. It's interesting. There are now, Cyanogen is a guy who makes special ROMs for Android phones. I recommend them. They're wonderful. And in the latest Cyanogen ROMs, which you have to root to get, he actually turns root off by default, which is a much more secure way to operate. And then if you want root access, you just flip a switch, you press a button, and you have root access temporarily. That's, I think, the best way to do it. So, but it's perfectly legal to do so. It's legal to jailbreak an iPhone. It does not, Apple's not thrilled about it. They made some noises when the Librarian of Congress ruled that this was a legal use of a hardware that you own. Apple said, it might void your warranty or something. But, they basically don't have a leg to stand on. It's your hardware. You could do anything you want with it. Just be aware, there are some risks involved. But I don't actually jailbreak Apple hardware. I prefer not to. To me, it doesn't add any value. On the other hand, I routinely will root Android hardware because it's kind of made to have that happen. Google doesn't discourage it. They usually make it possible. Sometimes the hardware manufacturers make it difficult, but generally it's fairly easy. Hey, let's say hello to Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for about 80 years, and he's called the GizWiz in these here parts. That's because he's our gadget guy. His website, gizwiz.biz, and he joins us every week to talk about a gadget. And, of course, we do a podcast together called The Weekly Daily GizWiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Well, how are you?
I'm very well. It's raining in Petaluma. We are now it's the last day of March. It is the wettest March in Northern California for 80 years.
Oh, my word.
And you guys back east, Dick's in New York, You've had the warmest winter in decades, right?
The warmest and the driest February on record. It's like the least snowfall and
we took all your weather over here.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Exactly.
So you got a gadget for us, Dick?
You know what? I have a neat app, and it's neat because I don't get any money for this, but in honor of tomorrow, April Fool's Day.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. I'm so excited. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is real. It took a long time, but MAD is introducing Digital MAD. You will, starting tomorrow, be able to buy digital copies of MAD magazine. You can buy a digital subscription for $9.99. Get a year of MAD digital issues. Yeah.
Now, this is on the iPad, right?
This is only on the iPad because, they felt the iPhone is really too small to be able to read all the continuity panels. And the fold-in is there, but it's neat because you just run your mouse over the screen and you electronically fold it in.
How fun.
I mean, you can fold it in manually, but you need a new monitor for every fold-in. It could be expensive.
Now, it's not out yet. Is the app itself free?
The app is free.
Does it come with any MAD content for free?
Yes, there's going to be some MAD content. I've only seen a few. I saw the demonstration of the electronic fold-in. I know that the little MAD marginals that are, the edges of MAD magazine and sometimes between panels, you're going to be able to zoom in on that so that you can actually see the cartoons. And as John Ficarra said, when someone asked why a MAD app, and he said, we really did it to save the ailing iPad.
It's about time there was some decent software on the iPad.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah.
Exactly. It's going to be more interactive.
It would have been even funnier if MAD Magazine had come out on the HP touchpad only. That would have been a good one.
That would have been a good joke.
New for the playbook. Well,
Well, we didn't develop it. It was 1K Studios. And there is that fear that at midnight, we're going to go there to the iTunes store. And they'll go, oh, yeah. Oh, ha ha.
They must. I have to say, I'm impressed because you must have worked with Apple to get them to release it on April Fool's Day. Or is that just a coincidence?
No. It was specifically asked if it could be,
The
permissions went rather rapidly through, so it could launch on April 1st.
I bet there's some MAD Magazine fans at Apple. That's what I would guess.
That is my guess also.
Yeah, yeah.
And starting with the issue that you buy tomorrow, it's optimized for the new iPad screen, and they're going to be adding back issues, but the back issues won't be optimized for...
MAD Magazine has been pretty hip because you guys did a CD version of every MAD magazine ever released, right?
Yes, and then a DVD version.
DVD.
So everything, 650 issues or something, was on one DVD. So this is good. And if you already subscribe to MAD, the digital subscription is included. And if you want to buy a single issue, you can do that.
You're known, billed everywhere as MAD's maddest writer. You've been working at MAD Magazine since the 60s. Do you do April Fool's, or is it kind of amateured hour for people like you?
Well, we really can't do April Fool's. Well, now we can.
MAD is April Fool's all year round.
Yes, that's
right?
Exactly right.
Yeah,
no, you're absolutely right.
You should do something serious on April Fool's Day on MAD Magazine.
Well, we have our Christmas tree up all year round, and then December 15th, we take it down. So it's kind of that way with April Fool's. You're absolutely right. We should publish something very serious tomorrow.
Publish essays, long essays on the economic climate, things like that.
Okay, that's good. I'll write one right after
the
show.
Would you get to work on that? Dick does a great podcast. It's called The Weekly Daily Gizwiz. We do it right after the show. And also, he's got a great website, which I encourage you to visit. It's called gizwiz.biz. That's the address, gizwiz.biz. And there's notes on all the gadgets. There'll, I'm sure, be a link to the MAD Magazine app on the iPad as soon as that comes out.
There will be, exactly.
Yeah, and there's also the What the Heck Is It? Contest, a chance for you to win an autographed real copy of MAD Magazine. Next time you're going to have to start giving away 24 iPads for the cute answers.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think that's a good idea.
Autograph the screen.
They'll jump at that. Yeah.
So if you want to get a Mad Magazine, there are 12 autographed Mad Magazines for the right answer, 24 for the wrong answer. So I know what answer I'm giving. Dick DiBartolo, gizwiz.biz. Hang in there, will you? Because we'll do our weekly daily Gizwiz podcast right after the radio show.
I'll be here.
Don't go anywhere. And I'm excited. You know, it's funny. A lot of people knew about this Mad Magazine app. I got a lot of email. People in the chat room have been talking about it. Dr. Mom's excited. Everybody's going to, I think you're going to sell quite a few come April Fool's Day tomorrow. Joel Braden in Florida. Hello, Joel. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Hey. Pleasure talking with you.
It's good to talk to you. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm trying to run a startup repair on a Windows 7 Home Premium 64-bit OS, but I don't have the disk.
Yeah, it depends. A repair, if you want to run the repair function, you do need a matching disk. Sorry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.